This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Market Talk for March. In this programme, we'll be looking back at last week's US PCE inflation numbers. We'll be wondering what's behind the rise in the price of Bitcoin and gold. We'll be focusing on statements from both US and European policymakers, and we'll be asking if any significant news is coming out of China's two sessions. So hosting the call from the UK is me, Frances Watson, and walking us through the maze of announcements, Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Frances, how are you?
Yeah, no, I'm good. And I don't want hugely, if that's okay with you, to focus on last week, because it feels it's all about this week, because there's loads going on, isn't there? So, but shall we, just two things I wanted to pick up on, if that's okay. The US PCE numbers. Now, these are the inflation numbers that the US Fed looks at to determine rate setting. Is that right? And what are they telling us?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of different flavors of inflation. This is the half the problem. Not only are there loads of different flavors of inflation, it's almost impossible to forecast them. So it's a bit of a tricky conundrum. But it's basically, you know, what are the items in the basket that we're trying to price and see if they go up or down over time. So PCE, as you say, is the one that the US Federal Reserve's target is explicitly set against. So they care about that one. The thing is that we get the other flavors, which is CPI, PPI, all those ones that you probably hear a lot about. We get those a little bit earlier in the month. So people take those ones, try and work out which bits of them in the basket matter, and then apply it to the PCE. We got PCE last week. Now, because we got CPI and PPI already, we already knew that it was going to be a little bit higher than we were hoping for, and it did actually come higher than hoping for. So on the month, it was up 0.42%. This is core, which again is the thing that the Fed thinks about. So 0.42. So if you multiply that by 12, you know, you're meant to do it geometrically. This is getting very nerd, isn't it? Yeah. But that would sort of be like at about 5%, which is far too high. Now, the thing that we have been talking about for a little while now, the last few weeks, is that there is a possibility that a lot of businesses reset their prices in January because, you know, you look at it once a year. You don't want to print your menus too often. Do it once a year. And that was potentially a bigger move. There was also some sort of weird thing about rental growth for houses too. So it could just be a one-off. As always, we're going to have to see the next one before we come to any conclusion. But that was a bit of a jolt for investors, particularly for bond markets, which had been getting used to this decelerating price level.
Exactly.
And then we get this bit of a chunky one, and it has led to higher yields.
And of course, it wasn't just the US, though, Ben, was it? Because European inflation numbers were a bit higher than expected. And that's probably something that's going to be back at the back of Christine Lagarde's mind when she opines, when is it, this Thursday in the ECB announcement.
That's right, yeah. So we're talking on Wednesday, so it's tomorrow when Christine Lagarde will be talking about that. And you're right, again, the year-on-year number, you know, both for US and Europe is still fine. I mean, core inflation, their version, just to confuse matters, is called HICP. So that's their inflation.
A lot of acronyms,
I know. But their core version, year on year, is 3.1%, which is, you know, a lot lower than it has been over time. But again, the month-on-month one was 0.4%. So again, you multiply that by 12, too high. So something just to keep at the back of your mind if you're the central bank.
Okay. Yeah, no, exactly. And way off their targets, of course. Now, on to current thinking and what's going on currently. We've seen early doors yet, but a bit of profit taking in equity markets. I mean, they've had a good run year to date, haven't they? A lot of the major ones anyway. But what's caught the headline seems to be the move in Bitcoin and gold. Now, I don't know if they're correlated. I know you will. But how do you interpret those moves, Ben? What does it mean investors are thinking about when you've got two of these alternative asset classes reaching new records?
Yeah, so as you say, alternative stores of value. I think you can try and work out why these prices are going up. First of all, just it's worth saying that these are nominal numbers. So Bitcoin up in the high 60,000s. Gold per ounce over $2,000. That sounds good compared to the history. But of course, you know, that money in dollars a few years ago would have bought you a lot more. I mean, inflation has eroded that buying power.
Okay.
So Bitcoin actually, in if you adjust for that inflation, isn't at a high. You would have been able to buy more things with Bitcoin when it was at the previous high. And same with gold. I mean, gold, I think, if memory serves me correctly, the high adjusted for inflation was back in 1980. So we're still way off that.
Way off, yeah.
Yeah. But nonetheless, you know, these things are going up and have been going up, and the nominal amount is pretty high. Now, one thing that did strike me maybe is people's perception of worrying that, you know, governments are running massive deficits. You know, remember last year, the US economy was doing very well, partly because the government was printing dollars and handing it out and running these big deficits. We've got various other countries that are potentially doing tax cuts, etc. And maybe there's some concern that fiat currency, which is, you know, currencies that can be printed and just handed out, like the dollar, the pound, whatever it is, maybe there's a relative erosion of trust in that, or maybe it's just that it's suddenly the flavor of the day on chat rooms and people are just buying it, and that's probably the bigger reason, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, interesting though, because they don't hit headlines that often, do they? Just thinking about credit, so your speciality, Ben, of course. I mean, we've got a bit of tightening in the European credit spreads at the moment, haven't we? But a slight widening in US investment grade credit. So a bit of divergence there. Is that significant, do you think?
So yeah, I mean, I think it's more technical. When people say it's technical, that usually means they don't know what it is, and they just say it's something to do with more sellers than buyers. But this time around, we have seen quite a lot of issuance. So companies issuing corporate bonds, dollar corporate bonds, particularly at the longer end, so longer dated maturity bonds, seen a lot of issuance recently, which I think has started to weigh on dollar credit, because you need to have more buyers to soak up that issuance. I think that's behind it. I've been waiting all year, really, for the higher bond yields, government bond yields, which have been creeping higher because of this inflation story, because of growth. You know, they have been creeping higher. Two-year treasury yields, for example, they were about 4.25% at the end of last year, 2023, and they're now a little bit over 4.5%. So they've gone up sort of maybe 0.3% or so. Hasn't been enough to undermine equity sentiments, hasn't been enough to undermine credit sentiment, credit spreads.
No.
It's just a little crack over the last couple of weeks. I think it's more to do with the fact that we're having to absorb new issues as opposed to worrying that those higher yields are going to cause defaults. But, you know, one to have a look at, because it has moved a little bit.
Okay. Now let's just finish off then on this section with the commodities. And oil has broken through the $80 a barrel trading range again. I think it's the second time this year already, isn't it? What is that? Is that demand or is that supply driven then?
I think it's more to do with supply. So I think it's to do with the fact that OPEC Plus, which includes Russia, I think, you know, they previously announced production cuts, and now we're seeing if they are maintaining those production cuts, producing less and therefore keeping the price higher. And it does look as though they are managing to do that. So I think that's just a reflection. I mean, it's not up by a huge amount. It's not, I mean, oil is so important for many things, but one thing that we track is the US consumer, because it feeds pretty much one-to-one to the cost of gasoline, petrol in the US. And that then stops the US consumer from spending on other things. So it is really important when oil goes up. It passes through straight away. It affects sentiment, affects all sorts of stuff. So going up is generally a little bit bad. It hasn't gone up enough to impact stuff. And it has been a lot higher recently. So I don't think this is getting us into another extreme. But again, another thing to keep in mind. And we know that oil, the situation in the Middle East, the supply restrictions there, potential transport restrictions, all that sort of stuff has to go into that. So for now, it's not impacting the macro economy. But yeah, again, another thing just to keep in mind, I think.
Okay, one to watch. All right, so let's turn to what's left of this week then. And, you know, because there are so many announcements, it's probably best to group these geographically. Of course, we've all woken up to the news Super Tuesday that we've got the two the two pensioners, as I like to call them, in the race for the White House again. I mean, crumbs, they must have some energy tablets that I don't seem to have at the moment. But look, let's go to nearer announcements. And Jay Powell testifying, I think, to both branches of Congress this week, isn't he?
Yeah. So it's the semi-annual. He testifies about monetary policy to in the House and in the Senate, to the different committees. It'll be interesting to see what he says in the meeting. So the next Fed meeting is on the 20th of March. And people aren't expecting a rate cut then. We've pushed back the expectations of the first rate cut until June. So that's people's now final sort of line in the sand.
And that's still standing despite these inflation numbers. That's still okay, we think.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this is going to be, so we get the next CPI print. So remember, that's the one that the Fed doesn't target, but it really matters because we can infer stuff. We get that one actually next week. So CPI is going to be after Powell speaks, but that's going to be important in determining if June is still on the card. So, you know, Powell, I think, is going to be talking about that. He's going to say it's probably still June, but it really matters what the data is. And then it's over to the data. I mean, we have, like I said, CPI next week, which is really important. And then we also have on Friday, we get the US payroll, so the US job report. So those two are the most important things happen after Powell. And then then the Fed is generally quiet. They have a blackout period until the 20th of March when it's the actual meeting. So we won't get any commentary, but we'll get those really important data prints. And then we hit. I do think, you know, if June starts to becoming less likely, if it gets pushed further, because we get very strong employment data, very high inflation, then what we've seen, those cracks appearing in the US investment grade market, might start to lengthen and get into other markets.
Interesting. So then what you're saying is credit spreads could widen.
Yeah, I think further. I think if rate cuts are pushed back, or we start talking about rate hikes, I mean, that's the thing that we haven't chattered about for a while. That's still a low risk, but if that happens, then I think credit spreads could widen further.
Okay. All right. So let's go to China now. And we've got the annual two sessions, haven't we? I mean, what typically comes out of that? What are investors expecting or hoping, let's say, to hear?
Well, this is over a period of time, a few days. So they started at the beginning of this week. And the most important thing for investors is the work report, which is read out by the premier. And in that work report, he reads out the forecasts for the year in terms of growth, government deficit, unemployment, all that sort of stuff. And so it's a good indication of what the policymakers are thinking in terms of whether or not they're expecting accelerating growth, decelerating growth, what sort of stimulus might be coming in. So we had that on Tuesday, and it was pretty much as expected and demonstrated, I think, that policymakers are happy with how things are going, that they're not going to make any big changes, which was disappointing for those people who wanted a change because, you know, the markets, Chinese equity markets, offshore property developer bonds, you know, they've been terribly weak for a long period of time. So it doesn't look as though there's going to be any significant policy to turn that around anytime soon. They're just hoping that this is a good structural direction that they're heading, which will be good for China over the long term. But that short-term pain that we have spoken about a lot is still there, I think.
So policymakers holding the line for now.
Yeah.
And talking of holding the line, is the ECB going to hold the line with interest rates at 4% when it opines on Thursday?
Yeah, I think so as well. So the Christine Lagarde, who runs the ECB, had previously intimated that the April meeting, so that's the next meeting, would be a live meeting for their first cut. So remember, the Fed, we're now thinking June for the first cut, so that's been pushed back. ECB, you were saying that April could be live, but as we spoke about a little earlier, that European inflation's also been a little bit stronger than expected. So again, we have now pushed back that first rate cut for the ECB to June as well. And the Federal Reserve is so important here, actually, maybe not quite so much for the ECB, but for a lot of other central banks. They will be reluctant to cut ahead of the Fed because it just makes your currency seem less less attractive for money to come in, because lower yields, people will put less currency. So your currency can weaken, and that can lead ultimately to higher inflation. The ECB doesn't care about that too much, but certainly for developing markets. But nonetheless, I do think the ECB is sort of in lockstep with the Fed, and you know, it's back to June, and we'll again see what the data is like between now and then. It could all change, but June is now the first rate cut, so still higher for longer, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, this brings us all neatly to our number for March for the minute. And what's your number then, Ben, and why have you chosen it?
I've chosen it's $277 billion. So
that's a big one.
That is a big one. That is the increase in the market capitalization of NVIDIA the day after their results. So they came out with some strong results, as you know, market reacted. Lots of people bought the shares, I guess, and they went up $277 billion, which is the size of a very large company, and that's just the increase.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is. And it just, I mentioned that because it goes back to what we were saying about the equity market performance. You know, it is so concentrated in these seven names. It is also interesting because I'm sure you're the same. If you go around and chat to friends, I was at a barbecue the other day and someone was telling me, it doesn't work in finance, but he was telling me his trading strategy for NVIDIA. So he's actually, you know, just trading NVIDIA.
Yeah, everyone's an expert. Yeah.
So probably to do with Bitcoin as well. There's a lot of people who are just shoving money around it, not necessarily related to the fundamentals. Now, if you think that ultimately could become a bubble, then I think that's true. If there's too many retail investors just pushing the price up because it's going up, then that does ultimately become a bubble. But you know, I don't think we're there yet. You know, if you look at fundamentals for the company, they're still doing pretty well. There's lots of other. The Magnificent Seven, there are reasons. We've written blogs on this, and it's very interesting. There are reasons, there are justifications for the price levels that they are right now. But, you know, we continue to see the sort of moves that we've seen recently. And if we continue to see the same sort of retail participation, you're just gonna bear in mind that this could get a little bit bubbly at some point. But, just already amazing market moves.
Yeah, phenomenal. And what, of course, I've forgotten to say about, we've really run out of time. It is budget day today. I'm aware of that. But obviously, we're not going to comment on the ins and outs of Chancellor Hunt. But there is a good blog you were telling me just before we came on air about gilts and swaps on the Elgin blog.
Yeah, that's right. So for those people who are interested in the UK budget and UK government bond yields and swaps, so there's a lot of pension schemes that are. As you say, there's a really good blog that talks about that relationship and what sort of implications the budget and the gilt remit. So how many gilts will be sold? What sort of gilts will be sold? The implications of that on that market. So, check out the blog.
All right. Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for that plug, Ben. And thank you for all your insights. And thank you all for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only, and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.